Barker, Barker Barnhart, Barnhart Berger, Berger Bayer, Bayer Bonamici, Bonamici Boone, Boone Boquist, Bruin, Bruin Buckley, Buckley Burley, Butler, Butler Cameron, Cameron Cannon, Clem, Clem Cowan, Cowan Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, Chris Edwards David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Flores Galizio, Galizio Gerard, Gilzer, Gilzer Gilliam, Gilliam Gilman, Gerard, Gerard Greenlick, Greenlick Hannah, Holvey, Holvey Hunt, Hunt Jensen, Jensen Comp, Kotek, Kotek Krieger, Crummel, Crummel Lim, Lim McPherson, McPherson Maurer, Maurer Minnis, Minnis Morgan, Nathanson, Nathanson Nelson, Nelson Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Greg Smith Patty Smith, Thatcher, Thatcher Tomei, Tomei Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Barnhart, Berger, Bayer, Bonamici, Boone, Bruin, Buckley, Butler, Cameron, Clem, Chris Edwards, Flores, Galizio, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gerard, Greenlick, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Kotek, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Minnis, Nathanson, Nelson, Roblin, Greg Smith, Thatcher, Excused, Boquist, Burley.
Colleagues, we have a quorum. Chair asks unanimous consent to take up third reading of Senate Bill 23A immediately as a courtesy to public that has come to witness this bill. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, read the bill.
Senate Bill 23 relating to expanded options program and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 23A. Representative Dallum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It is a privilege to carry Senate Bill 23A on the floor. It's referred to as an expanded option bill. It started a session ago at Senate Bill 300. Basically, what the bill is academic growth for students. And I might say to you that I'm very pleased that the Dalles-Wetonka students are here. And a session ago, several students from the just consolidated Dalles High School and Wetonka High School asked if this legislation could be presented. And I think that's close to 3 years ago. Senator Abel Gordley and myself worked on the original bill. And I'm very pleased that Senator Gordley did the heavy lifting. I'd also like to thank Representative Flores, as the last session in the interim, she helped with this bill also. But let me tell you what the bill is about. You can read the SMS, and I think it'll give you a pretty thorough decision. But what it is, it provides an opportunity for students, such as the ones that are visiting us today, to simultaneously attend high school and university or community college. Now, the bill has had a lot of work done to it in the first session. This session, cleanup more than anything. One of the details that was looked to, if you read the bill, is a school may opt out if there's adverse financial impact. On reviewing adverse financial impact, the Ledge Council could find no definition. So we have decided, in deference to the bill and in deference to getting the issues on the bill that are have been worked in committee out of here, the Department of Education will define adverse financial impact as a beginning balance fund of 5% or less. Other than that, they must allow students to participate. Generally, in the textbook, when you talk about financial management of schools, a reserve fund of 5% is considered mandatory. On occasion, they grow to substantially more. But with that definition, and that has been discussed with the Department of Education, I urge your support and the passage of Senate Bill 23 so that we might provide for dual academic growth of our students in Oregon. And it is with pleasure that I submit that bill for the students of the Dalles-Wetonka area. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
I have a question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
The carrier does yield.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is, any student from any school can participate in this program. Is that correct, or is it only certain schools and certain students?
Presently, effect would be all schools in Oregon. There are some qualifiers, but those came from the original bill. This bill cleaned up financial impact to the school. This bill cleaned up. We were going to remove the cap at one time, but all of those things were established with Senate Bill 300. So there are some qualifiers on who can attend.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close?
I would be honored if Representative Crummell would ask me three more questions. No, I do not wish to close.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dinkfelder, how do you vote? Representative Dingfelder. Dingfelder votes aye. Senate Bill 23A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. I'll remind the public, and I know you don't know the rules of the House, but they are, in general, only silent approval or disapproval is allowed. And so you're welcome to go outside of the chamber and celebrate there. And I'm wondering if we have anyone who has a courtesy who would like to introduce some members of the public who are here with us. Representative Dallum, would you like to unanimous consent to return to courtesies?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Dallum requests unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to welcome the Dalles Wetonka freshman class. Freshmen are generally the best class in the high school. They know the least and often do exactly what they're told. Their teachers are Paulette Brooks, Jim Taylor, and a personal friend, Stan Felderman, who is, I think, in his second or third year of teaching and is very pleased to see Stan here. The superintendent, Candy Armstrong, is also with them. And I believe there's 75 or 80 freshmen from the we used to be the newest high school in the state. I think we might be second now, but the Dalles Wetonka High School freshman class.
As it's a pleasure to have you with us. I'm glad you could be here. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my privilege to introduce my honorary page for the day, Tyler Willis. Stand up, Tyler. Tyler hails from Wilmar, Minnesota, and he has just finished the eighth grade. He plays the violin and the piano. He's visiting family here in Oregon for several weeks and is currently visiting with my legislative assistant, Lori Howell. We're delighted to have him here in the Capitol today. Thank you.
Further courtesies. Chair requests unanimous consent to carry over the previously scheduled special order of business to consider House Bill 5003 and move it to tomorrow's third reading calendar in its appropriate place. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 104 relating to underground storage tanks.
Question now arises upon third reading and final consideration of Senate Bill 104A. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 104 I bring to you from the your Ways and Means Committee, and this is about underground storage tanks. Senate Bill 104 raises annual permits for the underground storage tank program from $85 to $135 per tank. The fees were last increased in 2001, and by comparison, Washington just increased their annual fees from $100 to $160 per tank. The increase will create enough revenue to support the program's 8 positions, and the bill also removes a sunset on the underground storage tank fee structure. Without passage of this bill, the fees would sunset and the program would cease to function, causing the federal government, US EPA, to assume control of the program. The bill also increases the fines able to be issued in the field. A pilot program allowing field tickets was very successful as it streamlined penalty activities, and those being regulated support this change in enforcement methodologies. The revenue generated from the fee adjustments in this bill are assumed in the budget for the Department of Environmental Quality. Again, your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 104.
Further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, one of the reasons that you're seeing this type of fee increase on this particular underground storage tank issue is simply that underground storage tank fee revenues are projected to be lower because there's less volume to be done in checking out these underground storage tanks. The second issue I want to point out is this is a 59% increase in fees. It is as much as a 400% increase in the expedited penalties. And the average increase in penalty given is a 37.5% increase. Colleagues, I think we could have handled the sunset issue without these exorbitant increases. I'd urge your no vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dinkfelder, do you wish to close?
Yes, I would, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to clarify for my colleagues that the first of all, Senate Bill 104 continues and expands the scope of the expedited enforcement approach. The expanded approach doesn't change the actual field ticket amount for a specific violation, but allows for more violations to be covered through this process. So it's actually not an increase in the penalty, but it's an allowance for this ceiling to be increased. So actually, this is supported by both the tank owners and DEQ. This was very well received by the tank owners. I also want to close by saying DEQ has made great progress to ensure the facilities maintain pollution prevention equipment and have pollution liability insurance in case leaks occurs. This is very important, colleagues, because these underground storage tanks can contaminate drinking water, and that's, of course, a threat to public health. And because this program has been improving, though new leaks are declining, and also DEQ has worked hard to maximize efficiencies. It's met its commitment to the Oregon Petroleum Association and EPA to inspect facilities at least once every 5 years. This is an important bill, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Wisnett asked for a call of the House. He is joining that request by Representative Richardson, Representative Hanna, Representative Thatcher, Representative Scott, and Representative Crummell. Doorkeepers will bar the door, Sergeant of Arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll. Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Flores Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hanna, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummell, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnett, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excuse, not subject to the call, 2, Boquist, Burley. All members are present. Representative Richardson, purpose to your eyes.
Mr. Speaker, we'd request an oral roll call vote.
Representative Richardson requests an oral roll call, and he is joining that request by Representative Wisnett, Representative Dallum, Representative Hanna, Representative Maurer, and Representative Scott. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll. We'll call the roll in reverse alphabetical order. Witt, Wisnett, Tomei, Thatcher, Patty Smith, Greg Smith, Shields, Scott, Schaffler, Rosenbaum, Roblin, Riley, Richardson, Reed, Olson, Nolan, Nelson, Nathanson, Morgan, Minnis,
Maurer, McPherson, Lim, Crummell, Krieger, Kotek, Comp, Jensen, Hunt, Holvey, Hannah, Greenlick, Gerard, Gilman, Gilliam, Gelzer, Gerard, Galizio, Flores, Esquivel, David Edwards, Chris Edwards, Dingfelder, Dallum, Dallum, Cowan, Clem, Cannon, Cameron, Butler, Burley, Buckley, Bruin, Boquist, Boone, Bonamici, Byer, Berger, Barnhart, Barker. Mr. Speaker, voting no, Berger, Bruin, Butler, Cameron, Dallum, Esquivel, Flores, Gerard, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Hannah, Jensen, Krieger, Crummell, Lim, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nelson, Olson, Richardson, Scott, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Wisnet, excused to Boquist, Burley.
The vote is 31 yea, 27 nay. Senate Bill 104A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 156, relating to State Drinking Water Advisory Committee.
Question now arises. Upon third reading and final consideration of Senate Bill 156, Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Better luck this time. Let's see. Senate Bill 156 establishes statutory authorization for Safe Drinking Water Advisory Committee. Safe drinking water is a fundamental health and safety service with a significant impact on the public. Although the program is managed primarily within the State Public Health Division, DHS, there are a number of agencies and officials whose programs intersect with safe drinking water issues. A statutorily recognized advisory committee would provide an advisory role to all agencies and officials concerned with drinking water issues. The administrator of the Health Division formed the Safe Drinking Water Advisory Committee in 1981 to advise and counsel the Department on safe drinking water policies and issues. The committee has operated continuously since that time and advised the Department on safe drinking water regulations, programs and priorities, and policy issues. The committee plays a key role in educating and informing stakeholder organizations and policymakers about safe drinking water issues in Oregon. Colleagues, this one just establishes this in a statutory language, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Gerard.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, she does.
Would the good representative from Springfield explain to me why members of the advisory committee all look appropriate except the League of Women Voters on a safe drinking advisory committee? Could you explain why?
I'll check. The League of Women Voters has an interest in public health issues and safe drinking water and represent a lot of Oregonians.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Girard.
Question of carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Good representative, I'm too looking over the 15-member board appointment that's to be appointed. Can you please tell me why only water systems of cities with population greater than 100,000 are offered a seat on this membership?
Thank you, good representative. The League of Oregon Cities is there to represent all the smaller cities.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think this is probably a good bill, but I'm going to be voting no, and I'll tell you why. Is I live in an area that was impacted by what's called the Three Basin Rule, in which the three big cities, Portland, Eugene, and Salem, decided that their water supply was more important than anybody else's, and so they put special requirements on three different rivers, and I happen to live on one of them. This, to me, could very easily fall into that trap, and therefore I'll be a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, good representative. I've had problems with water in my district the last couple of summers, two or three summers. It's always the algae problem on our lakes. When you discussed this, forming this committee, did you talk about tasking or establishing county committees to also be concerned with safe water issues?
Thank you, good representative. No, we didn't have the discussion, but the special districts do serve on this, and I just want to make sure that we're clear that there isn't a committee that exists now. We're just putting it into the statutes. So I don't know if that answers your question adequately, but
thank you, good representative. To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
I think this is a good idea too, but I'm going to vote no because of the makeup. I think I hope the committee had a good discussion and looked at the composition, but this is a real problem in my district with recreational and also parts of my county that do not have public water, and I think that we maybe need to do this, but I'd like to have looked at the charter of this group, and it's not included. We just say we have a committee that's going to look after water, but it's not a very specific charter. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yeah, I do. Colleagues, I would like to, as I'm closing, bring your attention to page 1, lines 7, 8, and 9, where it says the committee created under this section shall consist of 15 members appointed by the public health officer. The officer shall make the appointments after considering nominees from these other organizations. So these are not the people who are going to be necessarily on the committee, but these groups will be nominating someone to represent them.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Excused for business of the House. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 156, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 561, relating to landlord-tenant law.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 561A. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, this is gutting stuff. ORS Chapter 90 contains the Oregon Landlord-Tenant Act. This act provides rules and responsibilities for both landlords and tenants. Senate Bill 561A includes a new process for tenants to repair minor habitability defects of up to $300 and seek reimbursement from the landlord. This can be done within 7 days of the tenant's notification to the landlord. In addition, very important, Senate Bill 561A adds new protections for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, or stalking. This bill is the product of the General Landlord-Tenant Coalition, a group that has negotiated and drafted omnibus bills amending Oregon residential landlord-tenant law regarding apartment tenancies since the early 1980s, every year but one time. In brief, the bill makes the following changes to the Landlord-Tenant Act. Simplifies the current laws regarding how minor repairs can be made to rental units and the cost deducted from the rent. Removes Social Security numbers from eviction forms in the courts to provide privacy. Allows use of a declaration in place of an affidavit on several court forms, simplifying the process of landlords, tenants, and court employees. And it implements recent changes in federal housing laws regarding domestic and sexual violence. Colleagues, the coalition put a lot of work into the provisions of this bill, meeting regularly over the summer and into the session to achieve consensus. Isn't it wonderful to know that we can actually do that? Achieve consensus. It is rare when advocates from different perspectives can come together with such success. And now, I am urging a positive consensus if you'll all vote aye for this excellent bill. And I commend this coalition for their excellent work.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is kind of a troubling bill to me. If you ever read the Landlord-Tenant Act in the state of Oregon, a landlord has about a half a page of rights. A tenant has like a book of rights. Back. Now we're going to unilaterally and arbitrarily let the tenants decide what they're going to repair on someone's property. And the landlord, lucky guy, lucky woman, they get to pick up the bill. What a neat deal. Bad bill. Should never pass.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson, do you wish to close? Oh, I'm sorry. Just a moment, Representative Nelson. Further discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I have some rental properties.
Representative Scott declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I have a significant financial interest in a company that owns rental property.
Representative Greg Smith declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Representative Thatcher.
I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
I have a family member who owns rental property.
Representative Thatcher declares a potential conflict of interest. It's noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I own a rental property.
Representative Patty Smith declares a potential conflict of interest. It's noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to declare a potential conflict.
Please state your conflict.
I have a family member who owns rental property.
Representative Richardson declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to declare a possible conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I have some rental properties.
Representative Lim declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Maurer.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I am a member of a company that owns rental property.
Representative Maurer declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a potential conflict of interest in the sense that my husband and I own rental property.
Representative Tomei declares a potential conflict of interest. It's noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Clem.
Okay. Madam Speaker, I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
I own a variety of rental properties.
Representative Clem declares a potential conflict of interest. It's noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict, please.
State your conflict, please.
I am a member of a limited liability corporation that owns rental property.
Representative Hanna declares a potential conflict of interest. It's noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also rise with a potential conflict of interest. My husband and I own a rental property, as does a member of my family.
Representative Boone declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, I rise for a potential conflict of interest and ask the question, does anyone not own any property? But anyway, go ahead. I do have a potential conflict. I do part of LLCs and, of course, have rental properties.
Representative Esquivel declares a potential conflict of interest. It's noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Butler.
I'm sure I, too, rise to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I own residential rental properties in Oregon.
Representative Butler declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I also own rental property.
Representative Merkley declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I, too, wish to declare a potential conflict.
Please state your conflict.
I have an LLC that has rental property.
Representative Gerard declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Potential conflict.
Please state your conflict.
Sandy and I own a couple of rentals.
Representative Gilman declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Nolan.
Madam Speaker, I also own rental property, but I'm not declaring a potential conflict of interest because the parade of people we've had at the microphones demonstrates that we are all members of a large enough class that we don't need to declare potential conflicts.
Thank you, Representative Nolan. Are there any tenants who would like to declare potential conflicts of interest? Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
I may be rich enough to own rental property someday, and I used to be a rentor, so I declare a conflict.
We will not note that conflict for the record. And further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise not to declare a conflict of interest. I prefer to invest in something not quite so big a gamble like Wall Street or Reno.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I need to declare a conflict with a former individual who testified to this bill. Seriously, I'd like to just close. Colleagues, you know, as I heard everybody stand up and say we are they and they are we and so forth, I thought, isn't it wonderful that you have a coalition, an organization that can work together to solve their problems? There is no way that this bill arbitrarily gives an individual, a tenant, the right to go out and immediately make all sorts of repairs to his property, bill the owner or the landlord, or repaired the problem himself. There is a period of 7 days in which the landlord may tell you that it's a gasket that's needed for a faucet, not a whole new faucet. He can come in there and repair it himself. But should it be something that is really critical, the landlord is not around for that week or so, an individual doesn't have to go without fodder, without water, a faucet for water, or any other dangerous situation in the property. But this, if you'll just look at the bill, you'll see testimony that there were 8 and 10 different groups of landlords and tenants who came in and said, guess what? We could work together. We're in this world together. Together is a wonderful place to be and pass this bill. So I think we should too. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Representative Krummel, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. Senate Bill 561A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 692, relating to Uniform TOD Security Registration Act.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 692. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 692 amends the Uniform State Law known as the Uniform Transfer on Death Security Registration Act. Currently, this law allows owners of securities or brokerage accounts to designate a beneficiary to receive the account on the owner's death. This bill would make the same opportunity available for investments management accounts, safekeeping accounts, or custody accounts held at a trust company or bank trust department. Designating a transfer on death beneficiary will make it easier for the owners of such accounts to pass them on to designated beneficiaries on the owner's death without having to go through probate. This will get the accounts into the hands of those who are to receive them and more quickly and less expense. In many cases, particularly where there has been an unexpected death, the beneficiaries may need to quickly access these accounts. This bill will make it possible. Encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Krieger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 692, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 693, relating to trustees.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 693. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 693 comes to us from the Oregon Bankers Association. It had 30 aye votes in the Senate and passed unanimously from our House Judiciary Committee. It is supported by the Estate Planning Section of the Oregon State Bar Association. This bill makes two changes to the Uniform Trust Code, which was enacted by the 2005 legislature. The first change would allow the trustee of a trust to terminate the trust without involving the court in certain narrowly defined circumstances. Under Senate Bill 693, the trustee could terminate the trust only if four conditions are met. First, the reason for the termination has to be that circumstances have arisen that were not anticipated by the person who created the trust. For example, the trust was created to pay long-term medical expenses of a person who has since been cured or has passed away. Second, the termination of the trust cannot be inconsistent with the material purposes of the trust. Third, all qualified beneficiaries of the trust must consent to the termination. And if the trust is a charitable trust, the Attorney General must consent to termination on behalf of the charity unless the charity's interest is negligible. Finally, the trustee can't be either a beneficiary of the trust or owe a duty of support to any other beneficiary of the trust. Enacting this change will allow for the efficient termination of a trust for which no purpose remains without resorting to the costly alternative of going to court. The second change clarifies that financial institution trustees and their affiliates may make loans or advances to pay trust expenses, losses, or liabilities. Sometimes trusts are cash poor and lack the liquid assets they need to meet their ongoing obligations, and in such cases, the trustee may either need to sell trust assets, which may be counter to the purpose of the trust, or borrow money to meet the expenses. Often trustees find it difficult or impossible to borrow from a third party for the trust. This bill would allow the trustees to a bank trustee or financial institution trustee to lend the needed funds to the trust from that financial institution so long as the terms of the loan are fair to the beneficiaries. And I also wanted to point out that the trustees do have a fiduciary duty. If there's a better rate available and they can obtain a better rate from an entity outside the financial institution that is administering the trust, they will be going to that other institution. Finally, Senate Bill 693 will accomplish some needed fine-tuning to the Oregon's Uniform Trust Act and will allow the Act to function more smoothly in the future. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Riley votes aye. Senate Bill 693, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 790, relating to leasing of ocean resources.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 790A. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today in support of Senate Bill 790. You may recall, it was some days ago, you received a floor letter from Oregon Environment on this with their support. This goes back a long way. This bill reinstates the moratorium that was required a sunset in 1995 and placed a moratorium on offshore drilling off Oregon's coast. This moratorium was allowed to sunset because it was believed that the threat to offshore drilling had passed. However, that threat has recently reemerged. Oil and gas interests in Congress have repeatedly tried to remove the federal moratorium. And last summer, a bill passed the U.S. Congress that would remove the moratorium for the entire East and West Coast. Less than 2 weeks ago, a plan to lease millions of acres along the coasts of Alaska and Virginia to drill was proposed. As a state, we have a long-standing history of protecting our coastline. In 1967, we enacted the Beach Bill, which makes the Oregon coast a state recreation area. And in fact, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department is charged with the protection and preservation of the recreation, scenic, and natural resource values found along Oregon's ocean shore. Leasing for offshore drilling of oil and gas would go against the values to those who have preserved the national treasure that Oregon's coastline for current and future generations use. In addition to the devastating environmental effects of a potential oil spill, the following is a list of the unavoidable consequences of offshore drilling, according to MMS, the Minerals Management Service of the federal government. These include erosion of wetlands, air pollution, and a single rig can create as much as 7,000 cars driving 50 miles each day, contamination by toxic chemicals such as lead, chromium, mercury, and carcinogens such as toluene, benzene, and xylene, dumping of industrial waste and debris, and the decline of fish populations. There are currently no projects in the works to drill off the coast of Oregon, and this is a preventive measure and has been a relatively short sunset to take into consideration a variety of future unknowns, including technological advances to the industry. Finally, and maybe most importantly, for those of you who may have a problem with this bill, it specifies that provisions do not apply if the governor determines an oil embargo substantially affects the supply of oil to the USA. I've been told many years ago that there's probably about 3 days' worth of oil off the coast, so you have to weigh that in there, too. This is a good bill and protects our ocean resources, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
I apologize. I didn't get to you before. There's just I had questions about a couple of the issues discussed in committee. One says, revenue generated from activities in Territorial Sea deposited in common school fund. I wonder if you could explain what that means. Sorry, I had to get a little help on that one. Common School Fund collects, or DSL collects any kind of lease payments, et cetera, if there is any activity, and that's normal for them to collect those that occur in the Territorial Sea, which is 3 miles from the coast on out. And that is, if that happened, those monies would go to the Common School Fund. Did that answer your question? Sort of. So I guess just one clarification on that.
Additional question? Yeah. Will the carrier yield?
Sure.
She will.
So meaning if there were any activity in the Territorial Sea, that would apply, but there isn't currently any activity, therefore it doesn't really apply.
Right. If it's only if it became necessary to do so. So
one more question.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
You said that those who might be worried about this bill, you said that there's kind of an escape valve. If the governor determines that an oil embargo is substantially affecting the supply of oil to the United States, it would take quite a while to get, I mean, if an oil embargo would be affecting oil supply in the United States, it would take quite a while, I imagine, to get any of that oil back out, wouldn't it?
Well, and I'm not an oil and I'm not a chemical engineer, but I would imagine it would take a bit of, you know, all the permits that would be required, et cetera. Am I missing? Yeah. And it would just take some time to do so if that were the case. But that proviso was put in just to as an out in case it was necessary. And I guess my comment on it being, you know, the escape valves as such, that they're really, of course, they don't know exactly how much, but it's what's estimated now to be out there. It's not a huge amount of product, so.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Further discussion? Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 790A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 883, relating to penalties for violation of pesticide laws and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 883. Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you Senate Bill 883. This bill was submitted at the request of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, Oregon Seed Council, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, Oregon Wheat Growers League, Oregon Forest Industries Council, and Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Senate Bill 883 allows the Oregon Department of Agriculture to impose a civil penalty of up to $10,000 per incident for violation of pesticide application, sale or labeling laws resulting from gross negligence or willful misconduct. Currently, the maximum civil penalty is $1,000 for the first violations and a maximum of $2,000 for each subsequent violation. In committee, we heard testimony about the urgent need for this legislation. Last year, some Malheur County onion growers were cited for misuse of pesticides. Misuse of pesticides can put a valuable crop at risk of being lost or unusable. The economic impacts of gross negligence or willful misconduct are too great to ignore. That is why Senate Bill 883 is a good bill for Oregon and its agricultural industries. There's no opposition to this bill, and it passed both the Senate. It passed the Senate 29-0 and your House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee unanimously. I ask for your support.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you very much. As the good representative just has indicated, the onion business in the state of Oregon is very important, and in the Treasure Valley we represent actually grow 40% of the nation's sweet Spanish onions. This could have been a devastating issue. I plan to vote in favor of this bill. My greatest concern is that the Department of Agriculture refused to or did not take part in any kinds of discussions with neighboring states, and while Idaho jumped in the middle of this, it did so only after recognizing that Oregon was doing so. And my concern is that Washington was never brought into the overall discussion. That's where this particular Furadan pesticide started in its use, and consequently we become the recipients of diseases that are immune to much of the good kinds of pesticides that we're able to use. So my hope is that in the process, this bill will serve as a starting point to bring all departments of agriculture in the West, particularly in the Northwest, together at one time, rather than treating this issue with a Band-Aid one piece at a time. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, I'll be voting for this today, and I'm glad people have brought attention to this, but I just want to remind everyone that people who use these chemicals, they cost a lot of money. They're licensed to do it. The vast majority of them are very professional and use these products in a responsible fashion. If you went into cities, on the other hand, the urban areas where most of us live, and started checking on how herbicides and pesticides are applied on our lawns, I can assure you, we'd be handing out $10,000 tickets all over the place. Our cities are a cesspool. These chemicals are used improperly, irresponsibly in town, yet we frequently impose our will on the people that provide us with all the things we eat, all the agriculture, all the timber, all these resources. When they're out there actually using them responsibly, they're licensed, trained applicators. And we in town, in my humble opinion, are hypocrites. And unfortunately, there has not been much of a lobbying effort on this by those who are self-appointed saviors of the earth. And that's rather disappointing as well. It's a good bill. I urge your vote.
Further discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I do. This is a good example of the agricultural industry stepping up to the plate, and I appreciate all the comments made today, and it's a very important bill. So good bill should pass.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 883, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 989, relating to public bodies exempt from insurance code.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 989A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move that Senate Bill 989 be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Representative Maurer moves that Senate Bill 989 be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 989 is a good bill, but without an emergency clause, it would not take effect until January 1st of 2008, and there's been a request from a public body that because of collective bargaining agreements, they would like to have this in effect sooner than that. And so we hope that it moves in and out of the committee and back to the floor with the due pass.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 989 should be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules will say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Senate Bill 989 is referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1022, relating to tolls.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1022A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 1022 comes to you from the Transportation Committee, and while it relates to tolling, let's first be very clear about what this bill is not. Senate Bill 1022 does not create any new authority for tolling in Oregon. That authority has existed for a long time, since 1925, in fact. It's not adding to that authority, but about updating that authority for the 21st century. The bill has two purposes. First, it's a housekeeping measure to bring a variety of tolling statutes into a clear structure. And second, the bill provides authority for electronic toll collection. If the state decided to pursue tolling, we'd obviously want to do so in an effective way, and electronic tolling is clearly an important method we'd want to have available, so motorists could pay their toll without having to slow down. We've heard a lot of testimony in the Transportation Committee about the importance of congestion and the challenges that's provided. This is a good method to address that, and it's particularly important for freight mobility, something we've also heard a lot about. The bill provides some specific authority related to electronic tolling, including the collection of tolls, penalties for evasion, protection of toll records from disclosure as public records, and it gives the Transportation Commission the authority to set standards for those systems, which is important so that they can coordinate with other jurisdictions. As we confront the significant needs for our transportation infrastructure and the even more significant costs to address those needs, we're going to need a variety of creative approaches. Given that tolling is an option we might consider, I want to help make sure that we can, if we do so, should we choose to pursue tolling, that it works as well as possible. In my view, tolling electronically is infinitely superior to physical tolling. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to let the carrier know I do not have any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Butler, you're in the queue. For what purpose do you rise?
To change my vote from no to aye, or from aye to no.
Representative Butler changes his vote from aye to no. And all members have voted. Senate bill. Representative Cameron, for what purpose do you rise?
Change my aye to no, please.
Representative, I'm sorry, do you change your vote from aye to no?
Correct.
Representative Cameron changes his vote from aye to no. Representative Greg Smith, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I need to change from aye to nay.
Representative Greg Smith changes his vote from aye to nay. Senate Bill 1022A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1034, relating to nursing assistance certificate fees.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1034. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 1034 comes to you from your Joint Ways and Means Committee, Subcommittee on Human Services. This board oversees licensing and certification of registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, and certified nursing assistants that practice in Oregon. The board's authority extends to investigation of complaints and a nurse monitoring program for individuals with substance abuse or mental health issues. The agency is funded by revenue generated from application and license fees. Senate Bill 1034 changes the maximum certification and renewal fees that can be charged for certified nursing assistants. This bill will raise the cap on these particular fees from $45 to $75. The board anticipates raising the fees for CNA certification from $40 to $60 and the renewal fee from $40 to $50. This will raise an additional $170,000 in the 2007-09 biennium, and the fees will be raised through the administrative rule process and will require the prior approval of the Department of Administrative Services and retroactive approval from the 2009-11 legislature. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 1034.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I guess I have some problems with this rate increase. The certified nursing assistant is the lowest paid employee of the certified workers in the healthcare system. This group is the least able to afford these increases, and I believe at this time it is inappropriate to ask them to pay more, and therefore I will vote no on Senate Bill 1034.
Further discussion, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I voted no in subcommittee, I voted no in full committee, and I will continue to vote no again. These are very low-paid workers who work long, hard hours in often much less than desirable circumstances. There was testimony introduced into the subcommittee that the there would be certain establishments that would pay this increase of fees for these folks. But these folks work in far more places than just in the establishments that said they would pay the increase. I think this is too much of an increase for these people, and I will continue to vote no.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, once again, I rise to voice opposition to fee increases that are exorbitant. The possible fee increase to these certified nursing assistants is 87.5%. The anticipated fee increase given by the board will be 50% of that 87.5%, and the actual renewal fee anticipated by the board will be 25%. Colleagues, once again, these are not the highest paid employees in the nursing field. They are on the other end of that scale. these fees and the related increases are way too high, and we could get by without this. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes,
she does.
Thank you, good representative. Representative, did this Board of Certified Nursing Assistants, did they ask for this increase?
They worked with the industry worked with the board to get to this point. These fees are paid for, they pay for background checks and, you know, criminal history checks, things like that, that you would want your CNAs to have.
Clarification?
Clarification, does the carrier yield?
Yes, she
does. Thank you, Representative. And thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative, just want to make clear, so that the nursing assistants themselves have asked for this increase in this fee. Is that correct?
Well, yes, the industry did work with the board on this. They, in addition, most, as the Representative Morgan stated, most of the employers do pay this, so it's not incumbent on the CNAs to pay this.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Hanna. I'm seeing no one further in the queue. You are recognized for a second time.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I appreciate that. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I only heard this in full ways and means, so, you know, bear with me that I was not in the committee, but in full ways and means, we heard no testimony that certified nursing assistants asked to have this fee increased. In fact, we heard no testimony that any other group outside of the Nurses Association requested this fee increase, but not directly from certified nursing assistants.
Further discussion? Representative Morgan, seeing no one else who wishes to speak, you are recognized for a second time.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Having sat through the hearing in committee on this bill, we did not receive any testimony in the subcommittee from certified nursing assistants. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I wanted to mention something that the good representative, the carrier of the bill, had mentioned, which I think is a salient point, something that we heard in our subcommittee and we received in the information, which is that generally it is not the certified nursing assistant or CNA that's responsible for paying the fee. It's the employer that's generally responsible for paying the fee. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I want to just clarify something. I've never sat on full ways and means, but I did sit on a special committee on budget in the House last session, and we rolled out all the budgets with very little testimony. So it's not uncommon for this to hear limited, if any, testimony, and I just think that's the job of every legislator, to do their homework, ask the question, see who's going to be impacted by any fees or reduction in budgets, but it's not uncommon to hear little or no testimony during this process. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
Just briefly. I just wanted to point out to Representative from Douglas County, just to help out, and I know she sits on the committee with me, is that the licensed practical nurses and registered nurses' fees for license application and renewal pay for this, because the CNAs are not organized, so they did not come before us and ask for this, but this is something that's traditionally paid for by their prospective employers. So anyway, and I guess with that, I'll ask you for an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the Representative Wisnant asks for a call of the House. He is joined by Representatives Morgan, Representative Butler, Representative Richardson, Representative Thatcher, and Representative Flores. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The sergeant at arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Barnhart Berger. Byer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Gallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, not subject to the call, 3, Boquist, Burley, Minnis.
All members are present. Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I request an oral roll call vote.
Representative Richardson requests an oral roll call vote. He is joined by Representatives Wisnet, Representative Scott, Representative Lim, Representative Crummel, and Representative Dallum. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye as their name is called, and those opposed no. The clerk will call the names in alphabetical order.
Barker. Barnhart. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, voting no, Berger, Bruin, Butler, Cameron, Dallum, Esquivel, Flores, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Hannah, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, Maurer, Morgan, Nelson, Olson, Richardson, Riley, Schaffler, Scott, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Wisnet, excused, 3, Boquist, Burley, Minnis.
Representative Garrard, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, change my vote from aye to no.
Representative Garrard changes his vote from aye to no. Representative Riley, for what purpose do you rise?
Change my vote from no to aye.
Representative Riley changes his vote from no to aye. The votes are 31 aye, 26 no, and Senate Bill 1034, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 8, relating to health benefit plan coverage of chemotherapy.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 8A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 8A is a rather simple bill. Several years ago, chemotherapy was only given on an inpatient basis, and consequently it was only covered under health insurance on an inpatient basis. And then along came outpatient infusion units, and it became both preferable and less expensive to do chemotherapy in an outpatient infusion unit, but insurance didn't cover it. So it took a while to get the insurance companies to get the idea that it was better to cover something that was cheaper rather than something that was more expensive and provide that alternative, and they finally figured it out, and most chemotherapy began to be given IV in an outpatient infusion unit. Now technology's caught up with that, and there are several forms of chemotherapy that are given orally. But because insurance companies only cover it on an inpatient or on an outpatient infusion unit, the oral forms of chemotherapy aren't covered under insurance, even though it's less expensive and preferable. So this bill requires that if they're covering chemotherapy in any form, they cover it in this cheaper and preferable form, if that's the medically appropriate way of doing it. This is not a mandate. The Legislative Council has sent us a memo pointing out that it's not a mandate. It's just one of those things that makes a ton of sense. And one of the representatives asked me today, why wouldn't insurance companies do it this way since it's cheaper and makes more sense? And the answer is, darned if I know why. But in fact, they didn't object to this bill. And I would urge you to join me with a yes vote on Senate Bill 8A and help the insurance companies along doing what is in their best interest to do. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 8A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 36, relating to Oregon Patient Safety Commission and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 36A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 36A comes to you with a unanimous vote from the House Healthcare Committee. There were two members who were excused that day. The Oregon Patient Safety Commission was created in 2003 to improve patient safety by reducing the risk of serious adverse events occurring in Oregon's healthcare system and by encouraging a culture of patient safety in Oregon. The Oregon Patient Safety Reporting Program was created within the OPSC to develop a reporting system for serious adverse events. OPSRP collects fees from entities, including healthcare facilities and retail pharmacies, in order to fund its operation. Senate Bill 36A does a couple of things. It clarifies that there is a limitation of $1.5 million for the amount that it may collect, and it also authorizes the Commission to adjust the capped fee in future years based on the CPI. The other thing that this does is it allows the public health officer or her designee to be a member of the Oregon Patient Safety Commission. This is a good bill. It should pass, and I request your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Geltzer, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Morgan, votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Representative Garrard? Off the floor. Senate Bill 36A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 109, related to charitable organizations and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 109A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Senate Bill 109, and I was just reviewing my notes, it is giving... Right now, in order to change the fees and fines for charitable organizations that must pay its fines when they don't file their reports timely, and right now we always have to vote on that statutorily, and this gives the Attorney General to set charitable registration and report fees by rule. The Attorney General has oversight authority over charitable assets and activities in Oregon. There are currently more than 14,000 charities registered with the Oregon Department of Justice. Some of the services provided by the section are combating fraudulent charitable solicitations, auditing charitable organizations, representing the public charitable interest in estate proceedings, and approval of the modification of charitable trusts. One of the most important efforts is education, both of giving the public and the charitable organizations to themselves. This program is funded from charitable registrations, annual report fees, which are set in statute and have not increased in 20 years. The charitable oversight program receives no general fund revenue. Allowing the department to set fees by rules will provide greater flexibility and ensure that the program is adequately funded into the future. The department has no current plan to increase the annual fees. In any future increase, the registrants will have all the protections of the rulemaking process of the Administrative Procedures Act, which include notice, opportunity to be heard, and the right of appeal to the Oregon Courts of Appeal. Senate Bill 109 includes other provisions to improve compliance, including an increase in the maximum penalties from $300 to $1,000, and an administrative mechanism to enjoin organizations from soliciting until they have complied with reporting obligations. Colleagues, I would ask for your support, and that every time that our charitable organizations need something worked on, that they do not, that can be done by the Attorney General and not coming to us for a statutory change. I encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Kump, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Scott, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Minnis, you were in the queue. For what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to change my vote from aye to nay, please.
Representative Minnis changes her vote from aye to nay. Representative Dallum, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to change my vote from nay to aye.
Representative Dallum changes his vote from nay to aye. Representative Butler, for what purpose do you rise?
I change my vote from yes to no.
Representative Butler changes his vote from aye to nay. Senate Bill 109A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate Bill 116 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Friday, June 8, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 207 relating to authority of Board of Naturopathic Examiners.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 207A. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Currently, the BNE does not have authority to address impaired licensees except through board orders that are public information. This bill gives the board that power. It passed unanimously by your health committee members, and it's a good bill and should pass. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson, do you wish to close?
No, ma'am.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 207A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 234, relating to production of biopharmaceutical crops in Oregon and appropriated money.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 234A. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, a biopharmaceutical crop is a plant that is genetically engineered to produce therapeutic substances, such as vaccines. The U.S. Department of Agriculture regulates biopharmaceutical crops. The Oregon Department of Revenue, the Oregon Department of Agriculture currently receives copies of federal permit applications for biopharmaceutical crops, all of which in recent years have been limited to research trials. In the 2005 session, a bill was introduced to place a moratorium on the growing of biopharmaceutical crops in Oregon. Although that bill did not pass, the governor then appointed a committee in the interim to work with the Department of Agriculture to review the concerns that gave rise to the bill. Senate Bill 234 is the result of that committee's work. It authorizes the Oregon Department of Agriculture and an appointee of the Director of the Department of Human Services to enter into intergovernmental agreements with the federal government regarding biopharmaceuticals. They may take enforcement action where biopharmaceutical crops endanger Oregon agriculture. The bill also allows the Department of Agriculture and the DHS appointee to implement a state permit review and oversight system and to charge permit applicants or holders fees that cannot exceed $10,000. Senate Bill 234 is a consensus product. It is supported by Oregonians for Food and Shelter and by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, the group that has advocated for controls on biopharmaceutical farming. It's a good product, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. Good representative, just out of curiosity, could you tell me what the fees charged for the state service were prior to this bill?
Representative, this bill creates the authority to establish a permit system in Oregon that has not existed in the past. In the past, the regulation of biopharmaceuticals has been done at the federal level, and the only function performed by the Oregon agencies has been to receive copies of the application. So this bill creates authority, although it does not require the Department of Agriculture and the appointee within the Department of Human Services to create such a system.
For the
follow-up question.
Additional question, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. So when the federal government did this, did we have to pay a fee?
Representative, the federal government presumably has some regulatory system that may involve fees for those who are engaging in biopharmaceutical research or production. But this bill doesn't speak to that, nor did we receive information in our committee about what the federal fees might be. So I can't speak to that. I can only say that we had information about what this bill would do with respect to Oregon regulation.
Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Further discussion, Representative Minnis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm going to ask a question that no one seems to have the answer to, and nobody wants to ask, so I'll ask it. Question of the carrier, if you'll yield.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Could you tell me if marijuana would be included in the definition of a biopharmaceutical in any form or... Nobody knows, so I'm just asking the question.
I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that, Representative. We didn't hear any information about that in our committee. The scope of biopharmaceuticals is fairly broad, and anything that would be an active agent that could then be go into production presumably could be, but we had no information on that question.
You're not much help, Representative. We're trying to figure out if we should vote for this, or you don't know. If you don't know, you don't know.
Is this a further question, Representative?
More of a comment. I'm sorry, Madam Speaker.
We could get... To the bill.
Do you think we could get judiciary staff to come up and maybe address that, the answer to that question? Because I think it's a pretty important question, and I don't want folks to inadvertently vote for something if it's going to include a substance that they're unaware of. That's my only point. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Clem.
Well, to the last question, or to the bill, I guess.
To the bill.
If committee staff comes up, I think that'd be fine, but I was involved. Somehow this came through one of our committees in agriculture as well, and we voted on it, maybe in Ways and Means or somewhere. And we talked about what is covered, and these are non-marijuana type objects that are injected with some sort of pharmaceutical, a plant that would be injected with a pharmaceutical, not something that naturally exists. But if we could get committee staff here, I'm sure that they could verify that. But this was what was discussed in committee did not include something that is a naturally occurring plant. It would have to be injected with something.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
My colleagues asked me if I knew what it meant, and I looked at the bill, which says biopharmaceutical cross means plants that have been genetically modified using a recombinant DNA process to produce vaccines, drugs, enzymes, or other medical compounds. I think that would exclude marijuana unless we had some killer form of marijuana that was genetically engineered, and we have enough trouble with the current form. I hope we don't get one of those.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank, Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the former speaker, this is a
to
definition.
The bill.
Thank you, to the bill. Biopharmaceutical crops are plants that produce therapeutic proteins to be extracted and processed for use in manufacturing drugs, medicines, and therapies. The plants may or may not be genetically modified. The plants may or may not be genetically modified to enhance specific proteins. One such drug, naturally produced by plants and familiar to many in the region, is Taxol, T-A-X-O-L, a chemotherapy drug which comes from the bark of yew trees. Taxol is used in the treatment of breast, ovarian, and some lung cancers. I hope that answers your question.
Further discussion? Representative McPherson, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. With a little opportunity to reflect and consult with committee staff, concluded that, and I think this point has been made by some prior speakers, but just to reiterate it, genetically modified crops are ones where the plant has been altered from the way it would appear in nature in order to generate a therapeutic substance. A very common way to obtain pharmaceuticals is to find them naturally occurring and to extract them from their plant, and that would not be a biopharmaceutical process. It would have to be altered in order from its natural state for that to happen. So there's nothing about this bill here that would be promoting or encouraging anything to do with marijuana, which is a naturally occurring substance. This is for those things that are much less known to us that might be created as a result of scientific research. And it is important that we make sure that in the process of tampering with the way nature presents itself, that we don't adversely affect Oregon agriculture by introducing diseases or wild pathogens or something that could adversely affect the crops that we rely on for our natural resource ag and forest industries. So I think it's important that we do this, that we create authority to enter into agreements with the federal government to control what's going on in biopharmaceuticals in Oregon, and that we give authority to the Department of Agriculture together with DHS to create a permitting program. So I urge an aye vote on Senate Bill 234.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 234A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 238, relating to State Department of Agricultural maximum license fees and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 238A. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 238A comes to the floor from the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. The bill increases the maximum permissible license fees for weighing and measuring instruments and devices in the amount necessary for the Department of Agriculture to continue to carry out the Weights and Measures program, a very important program. The types of weights and measure devices affected by this bill include retail motor fuel dispensers, rail scales, and grocery store scales. The last fee increase for this program was in 1992. The current fees do not support the continued operation of the program at current service levels. At the present rate, funds will be completely depleted prior to the end of the 07-09 biennium. And this will require the program to be reduced or continued, which could be a problem because we want to make sure that food being sold in the grocery stores is actually what is the proper rate, weight, and what we're receiving. The Department of Agriculture has worked closely with the industry on funding for this program over the past year, and the industry is supportive of this measure. The continued operations in the Weights and Measures program provides an important consumer protection services for Oregonian, and please join me in supporting Senate Bill 238A.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
In committee, I voted for Senate Bill 238, and after reconsideration, I believe that this is not in the best interest of the industry, and we had looked at a bill on the House side early in the session that would have put some general fund and softened the blow to those facilities that needed this, and so I'm going to change my vote on the floor, and I will be no.
Further discussion? Representative Dingfelter, do you wish to close?
I do, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, the last fee increase for this program, as I mentioned, was in 1992. Without additional revenue, the shortfall is estimated at $2.2 million. And this would mean that we could not provide annual inspections, we could not make sure that the weights and measures are calibrated, and we could not respond to consumer complaints in a timely manner. This, again, is an important program. We have to ensure that we have adequate implementation to protect. This is a consumer protection program. And as I mentioned before, the Department of Agriculture has been working very closely with the industry, and the industry does support this bill. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are... Representative Wisnett asks for a call of the House. He is joined by Representatives Nelson, Representative Scott, Representative Richardson, Representative Dallum, and Representative Thatcher. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant-at-arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelter, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Hunt Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Krieger Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Nolan Olson, Olson Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnett, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Hunt, Nolan, Mr. Speaker, excused, not subject to the call, two, Boquist, Burley.
All members are present. Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I request an oral roll call vote.
Representative Richardson requests an oral roll call vote. He is joined by Representative Nelson, Representative Jensen, Representative Lim, and Representative Olson. And we need one more member to join in the Representative Dallin. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will say aye as their names are called, and those opposed no. The clerk will call the roll in reverse alphabetical order.
Witt.
Aye.
Wisnett. Tomei.
Yes.
Thatcher. Patty Smith. Greg Smith. Shields. Scott. Scott. Schaffler.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Roblin.
Aye.
Riley. Richardson. Riley. Reed. Excuse me. Olson.
No.
Nolan.
Yes.
Nelson. Nelson. Nathanson. Morgan. Minnis. Maurer. McPherson. Lim. Crummel. Krieger. Kotek. Comp. Jensen. Hunt. Holvey. Hannah. Greenlich. Gerard. Gilman. Gilliam. Gelzer. Gerard. Galizio. Flores. Esquivel. David Edwards.
Aye.
Chris Edwards.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Dellum.
No.
Cowan. Clem.
Aye.
Cannon.
Aye.
Cameron.
No.
Butler.
No.
Burley. Buckley.
Aye.
Bruin.
No.
Boquist. Boone. Bonamici. Beyer. Berger. Barnhart. Barnhart. Barker. Mr. Speaker. Voting no. Berger. Bruin. Butler. Cameron. Dallum. Esquivel. Flores. Gerard. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Hannah. Jensen. Krieger. Crummel, Lim, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nelson, Olson, Richardson, Scott, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Wisnett, excused, two, Boquist, Burley.
The vote is 31 aye, 27 nay. Senate Bill 238A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 271, relating to courts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 271B. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 271 comes to you from your Judiciary Committee, where it received the unanimous support of all who were present. It's a court improvement bill brought by the Judicial Department to streamline, update, and standardize fee waiver and deferral procedures. The bill authorizes judges to waive or defer all or part of the fees and costs in civil actions if the judge finds that the party is unable to pay. It also authorizes judges to delegate that authority to the court administrator. Delegation must be in writing, and it must include clear standards. If a litigant disagrees with an administrator's decision, he or she can appeal the decision to the judge. The bill has a number of other provisions that build on these, and in the interest of time, I'll mention them as quickly as I can. The bill prohibits a court from delaying or refusing to enter an order if fees have not been paid, authorizes the Chief Justice to establish standards and practices for fee waivers and deferrals. It also requires that the court provide forms for free to apply for fee waivers and deferrals. It allows the court to order a losing party to pay the prevailing party's fees if they've been waived or deferred. And finally, the bill ensures that the confidentiality of the personal financial information included in the fee waiver or deferral request.
It's a bill that will provide our courts and judges an important tool to improve and streamline this process for both court users and court staff. The bill advances the common goal of efficient and uniform processes. Please join me in supporting Senate Bill 271. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Bonamici, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes no. Senate Bill 271B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 302, relating to judgments of foreclosure and sale.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 302A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 302 comes to you from your Judiciary Committee, where it passed unanimously. The bill will resolve a problem created by legislation enacted in 1989 relating to the ability of creditors to foreclose on property after a debtor's death. In 1989, the legislature enacted Senate Bill 307, which prohibited the sale of a decedent's property by foreclosure. It was in response to U.S. court ruling. Currently, Oregon's probate statutes allow a secured creditor to rely on a security regardless of the debtor's debt, which is in contradiction to the 1989 changes in Oregon law. Senate Bill 302 will resolve this problem by clarifying that the execution of a foreclosure may proceed despite the death of a debtor, and that the creditor may pursue a claim for any deficiency remaining after the sale in accordance with procedures for other claims. This bill affects the order in which creditors are paid, but not the amount the heirs of the estate will ultimately inherit. This bill has no fiscal impact. It's a good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 302A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 379, relating to children and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 379B. Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 379B comes to you from your House Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee. As we've discussed here on several occasions in the past, child abuse is a significant issue in Oregon. Child abuse, as you know, is a crime that hides in plain sight, with abuse and neglect often going undetected. We have many mandatory reporters, and among those are school teachers and school employees. Yeah, however, right. School districts are not required to provide any training to these individuals, and as we've discussed earlier, sometimes the signs of abuse and neglect can be very difficult to identify. One of the other challenges that mandatory reporters have talked about is that they will make a report about a child, but never know what happens, never know if the child has been contacted and if services are being provided to the child. Senate Bill 379 seeks to address those two problems. This bill will require school districts at least once each year to provide an annual training to all school employees on both the prevention and the identification of child abuse, their legal obligation to report suspected abuse, and the proper procedures for reporting suspected abuse. This information will also be required to be made available to families at the same time. Senate Bill 379B also requires the Department of Human Services to provide information back to those reporters who want to know what happened with the report that they provided. That confidentiality will be very carefully protected. The only information that the reporter will be able to get is whether or not contact with the child was able to be made, whether the department determined that abuse occurred, and whether services will be provided. The department is not required to report information if disclosure of that particular information is not permitted by law. Colleagues, this is an important bill. It's another step we can take this session to provide greater protection to our children, to provide some positive feedback to our mandatory reporters, and to make sure that our teachers, who are mandatory reporters and have the most contact with these vulnerable children, have the training they need to make appropriate reports to child welfare. This is a good bill, and I hope you'll vote yes. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Gelster, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bonamici, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 379B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 491, relating to insurance coverage of bilateral cochlear implants.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 491A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 491A requires health insurers that provide coverage for cochlear implants to provide coverage for bilateral cochlear implants. A cochlear implant is a very small electronic device that can help to provide a sense of sound to a person who is profoundly deaf or severely hard of hearing. You might ask yourself, why should we mandate two cochlear implants when, by golly, one cochlear implant should be good enough for anybody? Okay. Now, I can't ask you to participate me in a hearing loss demonstration very well, so I think it might make more sense to use the example of vision loss. So what does this have to do with hearing loss? Let me see if I can explain. When people get fitted for glasses, they assume that means two lenses, not a monocle. Isn't that just another mandate that your vision insurance be required to pay for two lenses? Shouldn't one lens be good enough for any man, woman, or child? Fair enough. So let's conduct an experiment. With a free hand, I am asking each and every one of you to reach out and touch your desk microphone with a finger. Next, place one hand over one eye. You can put your hands down. One hand over one eye, and with your free hand, slowly attempt to touch your desk microphone. Unless you are a Superman or a Superwoman, you probably had a harder time with the second attempt. Why? Because our brain utilizes information from both eyes to help us determine distance or spatial qualities in our environment. The same concept can be applied to hearing. Our brain utilizes information from both ears to help us localize sound and separate the primary signal from background noise. But why is this important? Do you think it might be important to localize sound when you're trying to cross the street? In that process, don't you believe that it might be helpful to know which direction the car is about to smush you is coming from? What happens when your only cochlear implant battery dies or just stops working? Do you hop in your car and drive to your local 24-hour cochlear implant store for repairs? While some adults may benefit from this technology, bilateral cochlear implants are critical for a small number of children whose ability to develop language depends on their ability to hear from both ears. And communication capability plays a vital role in educational success and personal development. As a result of being able to hear, these children are less likely to need special education and other costly public services. Children with unilateral hearing typically experience far greater difficulty in school and are 10 times more likely to fail a grade and are twice as likely to exhibit behavioral problems in the classroom. This bill represents an important policy for children whose significant hearing loss can be effectively overcome and will help those who would most benefit from a bilateral cochlear implant while not investing valuable resources where the benefits are limited. Senate Bill 491A is good for families, it is good for Oregon, and I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Madam Speaker, the good representative from Josephine County has convinced me. I'm an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Colleagues, I just wanted to mention our great Lions Clubs here in the state of Oregon. Just a few years ago, we all went together to restore hearing for a little girl with the help of OHSU. So proud of that university medical school, so proud of the Lions Clubs. And just to give you a sense of the absolute exhilaration of this little tiny tot, reminds me of the little girl when we were planting seeds said, "Shh, hear them growing?" Great bill.
Further discussion, Representative Dellum.
The carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes,
he does.
The verb smish, smash, smush. I'm not sure smush. Would you define that?
I refuse to answer.
Apologies, Representative, but you will not get an answer at this time. Further discussion. Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelter, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 491A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 567, relating to custody of vehicles.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 567A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring to you today Senate Bill 567A, which comes to you from your Transportation Committee. Senate Bill 567 permits a road authority to immediately take custody of a car or light truck that is abandoned, disabled, or left parked unattended on a highway in a location that is a hazard or obstruction to traffic. ORS 819-120 already gives road authorities the ability to have vehicles towed when they constitute a hazard or obstruct traffic. The language in that statute specifies some particular conditions when that towing authority is granted: on a highway at night, on a freeway during traditional commuting times, near a freeway exit or entrance ramp, for just a few more. That statute actually says, as used in this section, a hazard or obstruction includes, but is not necessarily limited to, and then it goes on to list some times and places when immediate towing is authorized. It can be argued that the includes but is not limited to language actually allows city authorities to tow at any time of the day. The purpose of this bill is to specifically spell that out. Increasingly, transportation policy emphasizes the importance of maintaining mobility during the middle of the day for the movement of freight and goods. Truck traffic, which generally concentrates itself during the middle of the day to avoid the rush hours, depends significantly on precisely timed deliveries. This makes unreliable travel time in general and disruptions from incidents in particular threats to economic vitality. There is substantial public benefit from ensuring that incidents can be addressed quickly, whether they occur during the traditional peaks of commuter activity or during the midday peak of truck travel. Allowing this bill to apply throughout the day will contribute to the smooth movement of goods. I want to emphasize an important point about Senate Bill 567. The intent is to give local road authorities the ability to order the immediate removal of abandoned vehicles on freeways within city limits. When cars break down or run out of gas, people usually operate their hazard lights, they raise their hoods, or they use flares. The objective will be to give people whose vehicles break down a reasonable opportunity to fix their vehicles rather than to tow them. Moreover, ODOT's incident response crews routinely help move vehicles out of the way and administer mechanical help or provide a gallon of gas to avoid the need for tow trucks. An abandoned vehicle in the shoulder of the highway can create safety problems, either by being hit, by moving traffic, or by leading to secondary collisions caused by passing drivers who are distracted by the scene. On average, there are 25 collisions per year in the Portland area alone involving vehicles parked on freeway shoulders. 38% of these result in injuries and 2% involve fatalities. Even on the shoulder, a vehicle can cause congestion and delay. On a highway with three travel lanes in one direction, a stopped vehicle on the shoulder impedes travel flow by almost 20%. A vehicle stopped on the shoulder significantly interferes with the ability of police, fire, ambulance, and other first responders from efficiently reaching the scene of another incident. According to national statistics, for every minute it takes to clear an incident, the time it will take for traffic to return to normal is extended by at least 4 minutes, costing time and money for all users. This bill creates an exception for the towing of large trucks. Data shows that it is much more disruptive to traffic to attempt to tow a large truck than it is to wait for repairs to occur. Colleagues, the goal of this bill is to reduce congestion, assist emergency responders, and keep our freeways safer. It passed the Senate by a vote of 28-2, and I urge your aye vote. Before I move on, colleagues, open to questions, I want to point out an article that you probably have gotten. It was dated Friday, March 2nd in the Metro section of the Oregonian. It shows a trailer rig that overturned at about 6 a.m. on a Thursday morning on Interstate I-84 near 122nd. The driver swerved to avoid a car that cut him off, and then he struck this truck, and then struck a car that was abandoned on the highway shoulder. It was 6 in the morning when this accident occurred. The freeway did not reopen again until 11 a.m. So this was 5 hours that traffic was stopped on I-84. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I know that some of you are probably wondering what Senate Bill 567 is all about, but I spent 2 years running the patrol office up at the Beaverton office, which was located off of Allen Boulevard near Highway 217. So I have a little bit of an idea of what's going on here regarding this bill. It's basically driven from the city of Portland. Yes, they do have an extreme problem with the flow of traffic and everything up there, and yes, they do not have the shoulders to really accommodate leaving a vehicle for any short time period. But one of the things that I always discussed with the troopers in my office was under an Oregon administrative rule that ODOT had, that if you did have a vehicle that was left abandoned and was not a hazard, because you have to consider that there's two different things going on here, and it was within a close proximity of an off-ramp or an on-ramp where it could possibly create a hazard due to traffic volume increasing during a rush hour or something, to take consideration of whether or not you need to remove it. Now, one thing I think that would have made this bill better, and I shared this with the chair of the committee, is to actually ensure that the agencies that are given authorization to enforce this would have had a policy in place, so the members of that agency could be able to then could review that and stay within the boundaries of that policy. I've had some discussion with members from the Portland Police Bureau, and this is an area that they're going to tweak. That in itself helps quite a bit. But to understand the need for this bill and to move and to actually provide safety to the public to remove a hazardous vehicle or a vehicle that's left abandoned, I'm in support of this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise today in opposition to Senate Bill 567. Let me begin by sharing that the message that you heard today by the carrier of the bill, the good representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland, very eloquently hit the issue on the head. No doubt about it. The issue that we're trying to resolve is trying to make sure that our roads are safer, that there's efficiency, and that the economic impact from a car potentially left on the side of the road is alleviated. And I think Senate Bill 567 moves in that direction. I cast a no vote in committee for one simple reason, and that's because I believe there's going to be some unintended consequences as a result of this passage. If you carefully read Senate Bill 567, it allows for the immediate removal of a vehicle that's found on the side of the road at any time during the day. I can understand where a legislator from the urban inner city Portland area would say, "Oh, that makes a lot of sense." The concern I had was I think there's going to come a time when Senate Bill 567 is going to be implemented, and there's going to be a life-changing moment for one Oregonian, and I don't know who it is. It might be a single mom with children. It might be a student who's trying to get to Portland State. It might be a senior citizen who just happens to run out of gas. But that individual is going to be parked on the side of the road, is going to be doing the very best they can to rectify the situation that they find themselves in, and their car immediately is going to be towed. And that's going to have a life-changing impact on that person if they're low income. That concerns me. It concerns me that a single mom with several children could find herself having to pay $700 to $1,000 to get her vehicle back out of a tow yard simply because her car was on the side of the road. Not necessarily in a dangerous part of the freeway, but on the side of the road. It concerns me that a senior citizen who perhaps had a mechanical breakdown could find him or herself having to figure out how to come up with $1,000 to once again get their vehicle out of the road. So I truly understand the need for Senate Bill 567, but colleagues, I hope we would at least acknowledge that there is the potential of unintended consequences, and I guess this is one of those reasons where I think we ought to just step back and say there's probably a better way to handle the removal of vehicles off the side of the road, and so I'll be a no vote on Senate Bill 567.
Further discussion? Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do. I just want to remind folks that cars now that break down, if they put on their hazard lights, if they raise their hoods, if they use flares, it's obvious that they're going to be coming back to take care of their cars. And also that ODOT now, the incident response crews, routinely help move vehicles out of the way, and they do give basic mechanical help, and they provide a gallon of gas if somebody needs gas, if they run out of gas on the freeway. So I just want to let you know that that is already in place. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelster, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Scott, how do you vote? Representative Scott? Oh, votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Lim, votes aye. Senate Bill 567A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 605, relating to construction contractors.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 605A. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm grateful to be bringing 605 to the floor today from your Consumer Protection Committee for a number of reasons. I think you'll see the reasonableness of this bill, and it saves me from a remonstrance. It's been quite a day. I think we've legislated with the argument today that we've heard a lot recently, and that is that we legislate ahead of the curve. I've also been interested that today we probably have affirmed that this body's drug of choice is in fact Taxol. But I digress, and I want to tell you a little bit about 605. Since we stick our legislative noses everywhere else, why not up the chimney? And that's what this bill is about. It's interesting. We received no opposition to this bill from those inside the industry, and so that is why the main reason why I supported it. It's a reasonable bill. I was impressed by the testimony of sweeps from all over the state, including my own Scott Hess of Silverton Chimneys. These sweeps, many of them are already licensed, but they believe that it should be formalized, and that's what this bill does, requiring licensure of sweeps. It's a two-part safety bill. The first part, extremely important to the representative from Santa Am, and that is it's a safety bill for those who are climbing up and down ladders and in and out of chimneys. But even more important is the fire safety. And I quote from the state fire marshal, who has documented 4,698 chimney fires last year with a $2.6 million loss. The fire marshal supports this bill, noting that chimney sweeps inspect and judge the worthiness of entire heating systems. So that's the safety issue. I think the reasonable part of this bill that needs to be pointed out is that it gives a full year exemption from civil penalties for unlicensed sweeping and cleaning. And so I would hope that our colleague in the Senate chamber, Senator Burdick, would take note that when you're trying to stop the smoke, you must give consideration to others who are trying to adjust. 605 is regarding chimneys, and it deserves your support. So I urge your aye vote or blow me a kiss, and that's lucky too. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Gilliam, do you wish to close? He does not. I'm sorry. Representative Flores, did you wish to speak on this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier? Does the carrier yield?
Of course.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. And noting your very brilliant presentation about how the industry has come and said, license us too, where are fees and those types of things set out in this?
Just a clarification on the question.
Clarification?
Well, thank you. It does say that they are licensed and that there will be fees assessed. And how much are the fees? Was there discussion about that? I don't see a fiscal here.
No, they were nominal, and I have to confess that, first of all, I was so floored by your compliment that I wasn't focusing on your question. And I believe that they are minimal, and I don't have those figures. My staff is on a smoke break right now.
Well, I'm sure they'll be sweeping up after that one. I guess if we can't answer the question, we can't answer the question. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
To the bill, Representative. No. Further discussion? Representative Gilliam, do you wish to close?
Just to say, Madam Chair, that I believe, having been advised by the very able chair of the committee, that the fees would be the same as any other contractor under the Construction Contractors Board. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Excused for business of the House. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes no. Senate Bill 605A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 648, relating to Lifespan Respite Program.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 648A. Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 648A comes to you from your House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. This bill makes a clarification in the law, making it clear that lifespan respite can be used not just for individuals with mental illness, but also adding behavioral issues to the list as well. As you probably know, the Lifespan Respite Program was a groundbreaking program here in Oregon that provided breaks for caregivers of those who need care from birth to the grave, whether they're children with a disability, aging parents, adults with disabilities, individuals with illness, and even those children who are likely to be at great risk for abuse and neglect. This bill also creates a council that looks specifically at lifespan respite rather than keeping that embedded within the state's Family Support Council. And it expands the ability of the Lifespan Respite Care Program to provide technical assistance to the lifespan respite programs. This is an important bill. This is a very important program, and this will help those local lifespan respite programs get more assistance in doing this much needed work that is enjoyed by individuals in all of our legislative districts. This is a good bill, and I hope you will vote aye. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Gelster, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Galizio votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 648A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 671, relating to public records and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 671B. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 671B comes to us from the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association, and it deals with that delicate balance between the press and the law. When I was in journalism school, it was called Free Press, Fair Trial, and when I was in law school, it was called Fair Trial, Free Press. This bill passed the House Judiciary Committee unanimously. It amends the Oregon Public Records Law to increase citizens' access to information about a public body's investigation into possible wrongdoing while maintaining the confidentiality of communications between the public body and its attorney. This is a consensus bill worked out between the Oregon State Bar Association and the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. Senate Bill 671B will increase public access to information. This legislation involves the balancing of the two important interests between the public interest of allowing citizens broad access to information involving our public bodies and the longstanding legal principle that communications between an attorney and a client are confidential. This attorney-client privilege allows the client and the attorney to be candid with one another about the facts and allows the attorney to provide forthright advice and assistance. Generally, Oregon public records law gives citizens the right to inspect and copy all public records unless a specific exemption exists. Two exemptions exist for records pertaining to litigation or potential litigation involving a public body and information otherwise protected from disclosure by Oregon law, such as the attorney-client privilege information. This bill will broaden public records disclosure by requiring that a public body make a condensed version of factual information that does not include the legal opinion or advice. And this will be done if the information would otherwise not be available because of the attorney-client privilege, the information is not protected from disclosure by any other state or federal law, regulation, or court order, the information was compiled by or at the direction of an attorney as part of an investigation for the public body in response to an allegation of possible wrongdoing. The information is not compiled in preparation for legal action already initiated or likely to be initiated against the public body. And the information has already been disclosed in part or in whole by a public statement made by the public body or at the direction of the attorney. A person who receives the condensed version of factual information rather than the entire record has the right to file a petition for review, and if that petition is filed, the judge, attorney general, or district attorney doing the review must then compare the record and the condensed version to determine whether the condensed version adequately describes that record. Senate Bill 671B will increase the public's access to information that's needed to maintain government accountability while at the same time maintaining the confidentiality between clients and their attorney. I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 671B.
Further discussion, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, this bill originated in Klamath County because of a difficulty with the Klamath County School Board and the fact that an investigator was hired after a citizen group went in demanding information on the budget. The school board then hired the investigator, who did an investigation, and then proceeded to give the results of that investigation to
the county's attorney. The attorney gave the information to the school board. When the citizens group came back in and asked for the budget information, the school board said no. That's attorney-client privilege from the investigator to the county attorney. This is a good bill because every public body deserves and needs accountability as to how public dollars are spent. This decision, by the way, was immediately put into a circuit court in Klamath County where a judge upheld the client attorney privilege. And it went on to the appeal court where again it was upheld, and eventually the Supreme Court, which was upheld. So there are no ramifications left except come to the legislature and try to fix a problem to make a public entity release how they're spending public money. Probably before the week is out, there will be another bill in regards to this, Senate Bill 800, which I will be carrying at that time. But this is a good bill, and I certainly urge your yes vote.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Very briefly, the good representative from Klamath County is correct about the genesis for this bill, and I do want to emphasize that the newspaper publishers and the Bar Association worked very hard to come up with this compromise solution. And as Mr. Blair, the County Council for Washington County, stated the question as, can a public body hide its dirty laundry under a lawyer's shingle? I think not. Please join me in voting aye on this Senate Bill 671B. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 671B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 762, related to payment of compensation in non-disabling workers' compensation claims.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 762A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 762A.
How's that?
Okay. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 762A from your Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed unanimously, came out of the Senate unanimously, and has the approval of the Management Labor Advisory Committee. In 1987, employers were allowed to pay a portion of medical costs on their non-disabling workers' compensation claims so that minor injuries would not adversely affect an employer's experience rating. The insurer first pays for the medical expense services, and then the employer has the option of reimbursing the insurer up to the threshold amount. The limit was originally set at $500 for non-disabling claims because increases in medical costs had reduced the impact of the original limit. The 2005 legislature increased the threshold amount to $1,500 per non-disabling claim. This bill, Senate Bill 762A, requires the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to establish a threshold each year based on the change in the Medical Services Consumer Price Index. The director will evaluate the change in the index and adjust the threshold amount, rounding to the nearest $100. The director will publish the updated threshold amount prior to the January 1st effective date so insurers have sufficient time to plan for the change and program their computer systems. the Workers' Compensation MLAC Committee recommends this bill, and it came unanimously out of our committee, and I urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Comp, how do you vote? Representative Comp votes aye. Representative Nelson, for what purpose do you rise?
Yes, Madam Speaker, would you change my vote from nay to aye, please?
Representative Nelson changes her vote from nay to aye. Senate Bill 762A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate Bill 788 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Monday, June 11, 2007. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 879 relating to pain management programs.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 879A. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 879A passed out of the House Committee on Health Care by unanimous vote. This bill proposes three modifications to the existing statute that created a Pain Management Commission in 2001. The commission is responsible for identifying barriers to appropriate pain treatment in Oregon and communicating those findings to the governor and legislature. The bill adds physical therapists, occupational therapists, and dentists to the current requirement for continuing education in pain management. These professionals are an integral part of the healthcare team, routinely encounter pain patients, and would greatly benefit from this education. This continuing education is currently required by physicians, physician assistants, nurses, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, chiropractors, naturopathic physicians, and psychologists. The bill also adds language directing the Oregon Pain Management Commission, or OPMC, to review the various health professional education programs in our state for current curriculum in the area of pain management. Though there is a one-time continuing education requirement for most healthcare professionals, it is important to ensure adequate training is received in the basic education programs to support a lasting improvement in pain management. Findings of this review and recommendation will be reported to the Legislative Assembly. Lastly, it deletes the current language that directs the Oregon Pain Management Commission to develop a pain management practice program for providers. It's believed that this would have required the commission to delve into clinical practice, which is beyond the scope of this commission. Pain touches all Oregonians at some point in life, and left untreated, it can significantly impact quality of life and affect every aspect of daily living. Through increased and ongoing education of our health professionals, this bill serves as another step toward the overall improvement in the care and treatment of those Oregonians affected. We urge your support of Senate Bill 879.
Further discussion? Representative Girard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict.
Representative, please state your conflict.
I am a licensed dentist in the state of Oregon. Then I would like to speak to the bill, please.
Your conflict of interest, potential conflict of interest by Representative Girard is noted for the record, and please proceed.
Colleagues, I question if I need to take this course because this session has taught me a lot about pain management.
Further discussion? Representative Flores, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 879A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 697, relating to property taxation.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 697A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 697 is a simple bill that allows a county assessor to reduce the maximum assessed value of property when the buildings are demolished or removed. Under current law, the maximum assessed value of property equals the greater of 100% of the property's prior year maximum assessed value, or 103% of the prior year's assessed value, and the maximum assessed value may not exceed the property's real market value. Chances are that when a property is in a state that warrants demolition, that the maximum assessed value of that property will have a minimal impact when it is demolished or destroyed. In many cases, the necessary demolition of a structure is replaced by a higher valued property, which ultimately will increase the local property tax base. Under current statute, the assessor has no choice. Unless it's a fire or an act of God, they can't reduce that value for the year when the property was removed or demolished. So this gives them the flexibility to do that. It's a good bill. It comes to you with a unanimous due pass from your Revenue Committee.
Further discussion? Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No,
she does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Lim, votes aye. Senate Bill 697A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 117, relating to telephone solicitations and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 117. Representative just a moment, members. The chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 117 be held over and made a special order of business on immediately following Senate Bill 116 on Friday, June 8, 2007. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 133, relating to disclaimers.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 133A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 133 passed out of your House Judiciary Committee unanimously. Senate Bill 113 provides that disclaiming inheritance is barred if for the purpose is or effect is to is fraud to disclaim its creditors. Basically, Senate Bill 133 is going to help crime victims. We all know that victims of crime often suffer serious physical and emotional and economical damages. What Senate Bill 133 does is not allow somebody to disclaim their inheritance just to avoid paying off these debts that they owe from crimes that they've committed. It's a good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Members, we have the wrong bill on the screen, so we will redo the vote on this bill. We're canceling out your vote. And those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 133A should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Representative Roblin, votes aye. Representative Cameron, votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Clem, votes aye. Representative Schaffler, votes aye. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, votes aye. And Representative Clem, I believe you already voted aye. Okay. Senate Bill 133A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 303, relating to garnishment.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 303B. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think we already voted twice, so good bill should pass, and we're done. No, colleagues, thank you. Senate Bill 303 is relating to garnishment, and a lot of employers today have electronic deposits and use third-party payroll vendors. What Senate Bill 303 basically does is fix some problems with the time of notice to allow these electronic employee garnishment processes to go through on a right basis. It's a good bill. We should pass it to make sure we get these things taken care of.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelster, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Dingfelder, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Olson, votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 303B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on tomorrow's third reading of Senate bills calendar of the Tuesday, June 5th, 2007, third reading of Senate bills. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. This last spring, my fellow colleague from Ashland had the opportunity and the privilege to announce that South Medford High School had won the state basketball championship. I was ill at the time and couldn't do that, and I appreciate representatives from Ashland's pinch hitting for me. But more importantly, we just came home with another championship. The North Medford High Black Tornado are now the state 6A1 baseball champions in the state of Oregon with a 27-3 record. So go Tornado.
Further remonstrances, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. We're very happy for Medford, who had one championship. But I do need to let you know that Crater High School won two championships over the weekend. That's not one, that's two. One is Crater. They won the boys' class 5A baseball, and they played it at Kaiser, and in a tight 2-1 victory over, after a six-hitter pitcher's duel won by Crater pitcher Chris Thomas, the Comets prevailed. And the second one was that the Crater girls softball team celebrates a victory Saturday in the championship game against Glencoe with a 7-5 score. Congratulations to the Crater Comets.
Further remonstrances, Representative Riley. Is this going to be three championships?
Actually, only one. Forest Grove High School girls softball won the state championship in their division.
Further remonstrances, Representative Cowan.
Colleagues, I'm ashamed of the good representative from District 57 who is not here, so I want it on the record that I'm wearing his stupid shirt. The LeGrand Tigers did indeed take out the Newport Cubs by 1 point in the state championship boys baseball at 4A. Congratulations to Union County. And, you know, that doesn't feel too bad to me because I am a former resident of Union County as well. Our boys will be back. They are only graduating a couple of seniors. And not only that, the good representative from District 57 has apparently also missed his second state championship. The 2A girls softball team from Imbler Elgin took the state championship at their level as well, for which I will claim just the teeniest bit of assistance. Back in the 80s, when we lived in Elgin, we didn't have a girls softball program at any level. And I started the girls softball program in Little League in Elgin in the 80s, and now we have a state championship high school team. All right.
And further remonstrances, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The good representative from Medford failed to mention that the starting pitcher for the North Medford Black Tornado was a poised freshman, Matt Maurer, who happens to be a blood relative and pitched five excellent innings.
Congratulations to all these great teams and to all of our wonderful teams in Oregon. Further remonstrances? Adjournment, Representative Jensen, 9 a.m., Tuesday, June 5th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 9 a.m., Tuesday, June 5th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 9 a.m., Tuesday, June 5th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.